Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer, and as you've been hearing on WNYC all week, reporter Janet Babin and videographer Amy Pearl have been making their way up the coast from Cape May to Montauk to check in on the coast ahead of this Memorial Day weekend. You've been hearing and seeing their reporting all week on WNYC and WNYC.org, and they're right now on their way to Fire Island. Janet joins us now. Hi, Janet. Where exactly are you, and where are you headed?
Hey, Jamie. Well, we're in Sayville. We wanted to stop off at some of the Fire Island ferries to see if people were getting an early start on the holiday weekend, and in fact, they are. There were crowds for this morning's ferries to Cherry Grove and Ocean Beach. A bunch of school kids got lucky. Some Smithtown middle school kids were making their way out. We went to Fire Island yesterday, and today we are headed to Montauk, the end.
All right, all the way to the East End. Well, let's take a listen for just a moment to New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, a little bit of that same holiday spirit this morning.
Listen, it means everything because anybody who lives in New Jersey, and Willie can say this as a New Jersey guy, the Jersey Shore is in your heart. And so to see this back reopened means everything to our state.
So there he was cutting a big ribbon in advance of the Memorial Day weekend. And of course, Janet, Memorial Day is about much more than beaches and barbecues. It is a commemorative weekend, but it's also the start of the summer beach season, and that has a lot to do with the local economy along the coast. The weather isn't very nice right now, but it's supposed to get better on Sunday and Monday. So what about some of those go-to places on the shore where you're headed? The boardwalks, what about Ortley Beach and Long Beach Island, Sandy Hook, Fire Island? What can you say about the status of those beaches post-Sandy?
You know, I would say that the governor is correct. 80% of the shore is open. We were in Seaside Heights. We saw the brand new boardwalk that has that new wood smell that he officially opened today. The beaches in Seaside Heights will be open, as will beaches in Seabright and Long Beach Island. Sandy Hook, three of the beaches will be open. Toilets, though, won't be working there. They will, though, have porta potties. However, places like Ortley Beach, Manaloking, those beaches will be closed. You'll still see a lot of damage in Bayhead. And, you know, Jamie, when you go to some of these other towns like Ortley Beach, it really does look like time has stood still. I mean, there's not been many changes since the October storm. You see these homes with the fronts of them sheared off, some of them punched by other homes, half standing, off kilter, just sitting there, just as they were on October 30th.
Yeah, and you mentioned the new boardwalk in Seaside Heights. Of course, we all know now the famous roller coaster is gone. But when you travel up and down the shore, your comments seem to underscore a focus on recovering the tourism industry from Memorial Day weekend. But what about homeowners or business owners that are not part of the tourism industry? It sounds as though the recovery is lagging for them.
You know, we did start to get a sense of that, Jamie. We spoke to homeowners. We're actually following a block in Ortley Beach, Fielder Avenue, the beach block on Fielder Avenue. And we've been speaking with homeowners there since the storm. And when we went down to see Barry Ingram just a few days ago on Fielder Avenue, he had a T-shirt on that said, "Tom's River Cash Cow." Now, Ortley Beach is part of Tom's River, the mainland government. And the residents there, that T-shirt signifies that many of the residents on Ortley Beach feel that they are not getting the services. They are not getting the response from their local government, the permits for their rebuilding, for their elevation. It's just taking them too long. And the mainland gets much of its tax dollars, in many cases, from these barrier island towns. So the residents are telling us that they feel a disconnect, that they are the Jersey Shore. They are the beach, they say. They're there. And they're not feeling the love from their governments, and they're upset about it.
And did I read correctly, Janet, that you saw something like 50 buildings in Ortley Beach just sitting there waiting for demolition?
Yes, more than 50, actually. It's actually about more than 100 homes have to be demolished in Ortlieb Beach. Now, the mayor of Toms River, Tom Kelleher, told us earlier this week that that demolition would start by the end of this week, so by today. But many of those homes are just still standing there. And it's so funny because Barry and Ileana Ingram, the couple that I was telling you about, Ileana started to actually clean up her street because she couldn't stand to look at all the debris that was still there, homes completely gone, some half standing, and still debris in her street. She started to clean up everyone else's property in addition to her home. Her home just was starting to become raised up, elevated this week.
Incredibly powerful images, and of course, people can see those on WMYC.org. We want anyone who lives in one of these coastal communities to tell us how you're feeling now, 7 months after the storm. If you work in the tourism industry, do you feel ready for this opening weekend? Do you think there's been too much focus on getting tourism back on its feet at the expense of helping residents? Call us up, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer, on with reporter Janet Babin. And Janet, on Long Beach, you reported that there are significant, on Long Beach Island, significant topographical changes to the actual beach. Now, this is, you know, something that we haven't really seen reported anywhere else. And you found this out by talking to some of the people who probably know best, people like surfers and fishermen. Tell us what you found out from them.
Well, that was actually on Long Beach, here on Long Island, Jamie. And we did. We spoke to some longtime residents, and that's where you learn the most sometimes, from people who have lived on these shore communities, in these shore communities, their whole lives. But we're also finding this in other beach towns, too. But in Long Beach, people are saying that the topography, that the ocean has changed, the break of the waves is different, that Sandy actually created some steep holes on the ocean floor on Long Beach. And so the lifeguards at Long Beach told us the lifeguards are going to be looking out for, especially for young swimmers, because there's going to be this steep drop-off that swimmers are not used to in Long Beach. And also it's changing the way the waves break for surfers, and they're sort of rearranging where they head to some of their go-to beaches in the Long Beach area because of it. So the topography has changed a bit from Sandy. And also in Long Beach, the beach itself is actually a bit wider and a bit longer than people will remember.
And we don't even know what the long-term effects of the storm will be on the ecology of the coast. Janet, I want to play a clip of Carl Labou. He's the senior marine scientist at the Nature Conservancy. You took a boat trip with him yesterday in the Great South Bay.
The Bay Park sewage treatment plant in Nassau County was completely wiped out, and in the weeks and months after Sandy, released 2.2 billion gallons of raw and partially treated sewage into the bay.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, that was Carl. Mm-hmm.
And Janet, we don't totally know how the bay will be affected long term, but it seems to be recovering from that. And does this have something to do with the Fire Island breach? Explain that a little bit.
Well, we were talking with Carl Labou and some other people from the Snapper Inn yesterday about the Great South Bay, the South Shore communities that are across from Fire Island. And the breach is very controversial in South Shore, in the South Shore of Long Island. Some people attribute the breach that happened on the Long Island or the Fire Island Wilderness area. They attribute the increased flooding on the South Shore communities to this breach, although scientists like Carl Labou, who spoke just a moment ago, do not believe that the breach had any impact on flooding on the South Shore. Carl, in fact, is glad that this breach happened. He says it's increased the salinity of the water. It's made it colder, but it's also flushed out some of those pollutants that he was talking about there from the sewage treatment plant that inundated the Great South Bay with all kinds of sewage. And, of course, Sandy washed a lot of oil and a lot of debris from land into the water. And scientists are saying that, more salt water, a greater influx of water to the Great South Bay is actually going to help it recover So we did speak with residents who live in these South Shore communities like Oakdale and Lyndhurst and other places along the South Shore. They say this breach is adding to their increased flooding, that they've had 8 storms since Sandy, and it's really contributing to their increased flooding and it's not helping them to recover from Sandy. Many of them still dealing with rebuilding their homes.
All right, let's take a call, Janet. We have Dave from Point Pleasant. Dave, you're on WMYC with Janet Babin.
Hi, Janet. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go right ahead, Dave.
My family has a house in the Toms River section of Chadwick Beach in New Jersey. And, you know, we were able to get on that first set of buses that took us over to the beach 2 weeks after the storm hit. You know, we made plans right there that our house had 3 feet of water in it. So my mother had said, forget it. We need to demolish the house. We're not going to go back with the chance of mold and everything else. And the permitting process and the process that, we've gone through has been, arduous. It's the house got finally taken down 3 weeks ago because it took that long to satisfy the building department in Toms River. So now, with all of the delays and all of the hoops that you have to jump through, we're looking at just having gotten the permits and everything, or the plans for the new house in, raised 14 feet, everything, so we'd be above the flood level. But they're saying it could be anywhere from 3 to 6 months to get the next building approval. So you're looking, a year or more just to get the permits to build the house.
I know, Dave, I feel for you so much. I'm so glad you called to tell everyone that this is still happening. And, when I asked your mayor, the mayor of Toms River, Tom Kelleher, about this, he is adamant that the township is doing as much as it can, that he thinks they're expediting the permits, and he thinks that it's actually the builders and contractors who are telling people that, they're blaming it on, Toms River Township, when meanwhile it's just the contractors being late.
And Jen, I'm sorry, Dave, go ahead if you have a follow-up. I also have a follow-up to your question. You raised so many good points, but please ask one if you have it.
When we dropped off the demolition permit, you had to have, your water, the gas, the sewer, electric, all those permits or all those letters from the utilities in. And then they said, what my father asked, what's the expected time now? Can you just stamp so we can get the house demoed? And they were saying, it'll probably be, 15 to 20 business days to get a demo permit. You're looking at, 4 weeks to get a demolition permit. And it doesn't jive with, expediting. And you would think maybe some of the FEMA money could be used more widely to employ some more people in the building departments to look through the permitting and to expedite it.
Dave, thank you so much for your call. And Janet, he raised a second point, and that's the issue of raising up homes and businesses. Residents in many places, Point Pleasant and elsewhere, are still trying to figure out if they can or even should raise up their homes and businesses. The town of Highlands, which is actually not very high at all relative to some others, is considering raising the whole town. Did you find this question, raising up or not raising up, prevalent all along the coast, Cape May, Jamie, to where you are now?
Jamie, absolutely. I mean, this is the question that is just heart-wrenching. Personal calculus has to be done by everyone who received more than 50% damage to their home from Sandy. They have to either elevate if they want to get flood insurance and if they want to get assistance from the government, or they have to consider moving. This is the question of the year for coastal communities. And so many people we speak with are still dealing with this question. Many homes just now beginning to raise up. There is federal assistance money if it's your primary home and if you meet certain conditions. And many people are waiting on that grant money. On Fielder Avenue in Ortley Beach, one of the residents there, Barry Ingram, told us he had to actually cash in his life insurance policy in order to pay to raise up his home. And guess what? He's still $25,000 short. he told me he's hoping for the grant money, and, you know, he's hoping that his contractors will be patient.
All right, let's take a call now from Paula. She's in Breezy Point. Paula, you're on WMYC with Janet Babin.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I was just in Breezy last weekend, and I was shocked. It's like a ghost town. Only 20% of the families are able to live in their homes even part-time. A major stopping block, I think, is money and insurance money coming through for people. And it's really, I don't know that everyone's aware of how, you know, bad these communities still are. There's debris. The government did a fantastic job of helping clear things out. And now I think it's an issue of money. And concerning the raising process, that's a whole other ball game that everybody's contending with. And it's a really difficult round robin, because in order to try to raise your house, you have to come up with more money to hire engineers to get the money that you might be able to access from insurance. So I just wish that they would sort of maybe streamline the process for communities, where there could be like one engineer for an entire community, you know, that could just sort of push these things through without having to ask so much of people who have so little.
Paula, thank you for your call. Janet, I imagine this is entirely consistent with what you're hearing there on the ground.
Sad but true, Jamie. FEMA is still working out the floodplain elevation maps, the new elevation maps for so many towns, that there's even confusion about how high you have to elevate your home in order to comply with FEMA standards. Many local governments are telling people to hold off if they can, which has contributed to the delay. But others just don't know what to tell their local residents. They're saying go as high as you possibly can. But that's really difficult to do. And then, as Paula mentioned, our caller, you know, you have to get all these documents that state that you're elevating to the correct level. That requires engineers and specialty contractors to do this. And all this costs money that many residents just don't have it. And insurance money has come in, but it's come in installments. And some people are still telling me that they're getting stonewalled by their insurance companies, even if they had flood insurance and did everything right.
Now, Janet, you are off to Montauk next. What was it like back in January when you and Amy were there, and what are you going to be looking for this time around?
Well, as we head out to the tip of Long Island, when we were there the first time around, so many other communities received so much damage that we didn't hear much about Montauk and the Hamptons. They did receive some damage. They were not spared. Of course, it was not nearly as bad as some places like Breezy Point and Long Beach, where the boardwalk has been destroyed. But people there are rebuilding. We'll be looking for that. Also, some wealthy homeowners in parts of the Hamptons are building seawalls, private seawalls, to protect them from the next Sandy. And if that's causing some concern among other residents, because just imagine when you put your feet into the surf, into the ocean, right? And the wave comes up, Jamie, and then the wave goes back. The wave pulls back, and yet everywhere around your feet, the sand gets a little bit higher, if you can remember this, putting your feet into the ocean. And that's exactly what residents tell us happens with seawalls, that it protects the home right behind the seawall, but everyone else around it gets this buildup of sand and debris, and they're concerned about these private seawalls. So we're going to try and check in on some of these Hampton homes to see what's going on there.
And we will continue to check in with Janet Babin and her colleague, videographer Amy Pearl. I also want to mention that WMYC has been collecting your memories of the coast. We ask you to go to WNYC.org, click on the Brian Lehrer Show, and pin your memory and photos on a map. We have a bunch there already. You can follow Janet and Amy on Twitter at Jen A. Babin and at Sugar Pond. You can also follow the hashtag CoachCheck. Thanks, Janet.
Thank you, Jamie.
And coming up next, a conversation with Color Line's editor Kai Wright on the recent hate crimes in New York. I'm Jamie Floyd in for Ryan Lehrer. Stay with us.